We're back with another episode of True Crime Stories. So, today we'll be going over a ruthless, unsuspecting individual named Donald Gaskins, aka Pee-wee, who stood at 5'4" and managed to murder dozens of innocent hitchhikers and more. So, without further ado, let's get into it. Donald Gaskins was born a bastard on March 13, 1933, in Manning, South Carolina, to Julia Parrott. His mother and him lived on and off with several of his mother's boyfriends during his childhood, many of which neglected and abused Donald, sometimes beating him just for being around. And what did his mother do to protect him? Well, absolutely nothing. Donald was essentially left alone to raise himself. He spent much of his time unsupervised, even managing to drink a bottle of kerosene, which is lamp oil, at the age of one, which caused him to have convulsions for the next 2 years. When his mother finally married, his stepfather beat him and his four half-siblings regularly. Gaskins was given the name Pee-wee as a child because of his small frame, and he would later grow up to be 5'4", weighing only 130. When he began school, the violence he experienced at home followed him into the classrooms, fighting daily with other boys and girls, constantly being punished by the teachers, and had enough of it at the age of 11. So, he quit school and continued to work on cars at the local garage while also helping the family around the farm. Next is one of the turning points in his life, and not in a good direction. Already developing a hatred for mankind, especially women, he became part of a group known as the Trouble Trio. At the garage where Gaskins worked part-time, he met Danny and Marsh, two boys close to his age and out of school. And with nothing to keep them busy like most young kids, they couldn't help but get into trouble. They named themselves the Trouble Trio and began breaking into homes to steal, picking up prostitutes in nearby cities. They would gang rape young boys and girls and even women. They also would brutally beat random people. The group's sexual rampage came to a stop after being caught for gang raping Marsh's younger sister. As a punishment, their parents bound and beat the boys until they bled. After the beatings, Marsh and Danny left the area. Although that ended the terror of the group, Gaskins continued to break into homes alone. And keep in mind, all this is happening when Pee-wee is still under 13 years old. So yeah, that's already pretty intense. In 1946, at the age of 13, a girl he knew caught him in the act of robbing a home, and she attacked him with the axe. But he managed to get away from her, striking her in the head and arm with it before running from the scene. This ultimately led him to reform school. So, the girl survived the attack, and Gaskins was arrested, tried, and found guilty of assault with a deadly weapon and intent to kill. He was sent to South Carolina Industrial School for Boys until he turned 18. During the court proceedings, Gaskins heard his real name, Donald, spoken for the first time in his life, which goes to show you how much his mother didn't even have the time of day to tell him his own name. Reform school was particularly rough on the young, small Gaskins, but you get what you give, right? Almost immediately, he was gang raped by 20 of his new fellow peers. He spent the rest of his time there accepting protection from a dorm boss boy in exchange for sex, or trying unsuccessfully to escape from the reformatory. He was repeatedly beaten for his escape attempts and sexually exploited among the gang favored by Boss Boy. Gaskins' desperate attempts to escape resulted in fights with guards, and he was sent for observation to the state mental hospital. Doctors found him sane enough to return to reform school. A few nights he managed to escape again and managed to get on a traveling carnival. While there, he married a 13-year-old girl and turned himself over to the police to finish his sentence at reform school. He was released on March 13, 1951, on his 18th birthday. After reform school, Gaskins got a job on a tobacco plantation but could not resist temptations. He and a partner got involved with insurance fraud by collaborating with tobacco farmers to burn their farms down for a fee. People began talking about the barn fires and suspected Gaskins' involvement. Gaskins' employer's daughter, just a teenager, confronted Gaskins about his reputation as the barn burner. Well, this didn't go over well for her, because he ended up splitting the girl's skull with a hammer and was sent to prison for another 5 years for assault with a deadly weapon and attempted murder in 1953. And As you can guess, prison life was not much different from his time in reform school. Not surprised, Gaskin was assigned to the sexual service of one of the prison gang leaders in exchange for protection again. He realized that the only way he could survive prison was to become, quote, a powerful man, having a reputation of being so brutal and dangerous that others would stay away. But, like I said before, his nickname was Pee-wee, and he only stood at 5'4" and was light. So no one was going to be scared of his physical stature, only his actions could make him out to be a force to be reckoned with. So, he set his sights on one of the most feared inmates in the prison, Hazel Brazel. Gaskins manipulated himself into a relationship of trust and probably some booty with Brazel, then slit his throat. He was found guilty of manslaughter and spent the next 6 months in solitary confinement, receiving an extra 3 years on his current sentence. But he became a prisoner to stay clear of. And, oh, remember that 13-year-old girl that he married at the circus? Well, she filed for divorce in 1955, and when this happened, we have no idea what's going on in the back of his head, because he decided it was time to escape again from prison, where he hid in the back of a garbage truck and made his way to Florida. There he joined another carnival and married for a second time. The marriage ended after 2 weeks. Gaskins then became involved with another carnival woman named Betty Gates, and they drove to Cookeville, Tennessee to bail her brother out of jail. Now, it's kind of interesting to think about, he keeps finding love and sanctuary at carnivals, which makes you wonder how many dangerous people find refuge in a traveling profession, and they get to work with kids all the time. Like, the majority of people that go to carnivals are pretty young, so I mean, I know I went to a few carnivals when I was younger. Like, I went to a lot of carnivals, actually, and the guy working the rides could have been a killer. But anyways, back to the story. So, Gaskins went to jail with the bail money and a carton of cigarettes to bail Betty's brother out. But when he returned to the hotel, Betty and his stolen car were gone. Betty never returned, but the police did. Gaskins discovered that he's been bamboozled. Betty's brother was actually her husband, who escaped from the prison with the aid of the razor blade tucked inside of the carton of cigarettes. This led the police to finding out about Gaskin being an escaped convict and was returned back to prison, where he received an additional 9 months in prison for aiding an escape and for knifing a fellow prisoner. He was later convicted of driving a stolen car across state lines and received 3 years in federal prison in Atlanta, Georgia. There he got to meet the mafia boss, Frank Costello, who named him the Little Hatchet Man and offered him future employment. Gaskins was released from prison in August 1961 and returned to Florence, South Carolina. He got a job working in tobacco sheds, but just couldn't stay out of trouble. He was back to robbing homes again while working for a traveling minister as his driver and assistant. Isn't that ironic? This gave him the opportunity to break into homes in different towns where the group preached, making his crimes harder to trace. In 1962, Gaskins married a third time, because you know, a third time's a charm, but hasn't changed his ways. He was arrested for statutory rape of a 12-year-old girl, but managed to escape to North Carolina in a stolen car. There he met a 17-year-old and married for the fourth time, because I guess why not? But she ended up turning him into the police, and Gaskins was convicted of statutory rape and received 6 years in prison and was paroled in November 1968. Throughout his life, Pee-wee said that he's always had, quote, them aggravated and bothersome feelings that seemed to push him into criminal mischief. And in September 1969, he found a way to feed his feelings when he picked up a young female hitchhiker in North Carolina. Gaskins became angry with her when she laughed at him for proposing sex. So what did he do in response? He beat her until she was unconscious, then raped, sodomized, and tortured her, and sank her weighted body into a swamp where she drowned. I mean, how messed up is that? Guy gets rejected and does something like this, and kills her by drowning her? This brutal murder is what Pee-wee later described as, quote, a vision into the bothersome feelings that haunted him throughout his life, finally discovering a way to satisfy his urges. And from then on, it was like an addiction. He was hooked. He began experimenting with torture as if it were a craft to perfect on, often keeping his mutilated victims alive for days. As time went on, he got darker and darker, crossing more lines, like venturing into cannibalism. often eating severed parts of the victim while forcing them to watch or to even participate in eating. Okay, pause. It blows my mind that we live in a world with this kind of evil in it. This is just unfathomable. Like, it's so sick. Like, forcing someone to watch you eat them, or even making them participate in eating themselves. I mean, I guess Mark Twain was right about some things. Like, truth is stranger than fiction, because this shit's, you can't make this shit up. But back to the story. Pee-wee had a preference for young female victims, but he didn't discriminate against an opportunity, claiming that by 1975, he had killed over 80 young boys and girls found along the North Carolina highways. Now, this itch just couldn't be scratched, and he considered his highway murders as weekend recreation, like, you know, a hobby or something like that, and only referred to killing people you know as serious murders, quote. Serious murders included a 15-year-old niece, Janice Kirby, and her friend, Patricia Osbrook. In November 1970, he offered them a ride home from a bar, but drove them out to an abandoned house where he raped, beat, and finally drowned them. His next serious murder was Martha Dix, 20 years old, who was attracted to Gaskins and hung out with him around his part-time job at the car repair shop. In 1973, Gaskins purchased an old hearse, telling people at his favorite bar that he needed a vehicle to haul the people he killed to his private cemetery. Isn't this guy cocky? This was in Prospect, South Carolina, where he lived with his wife and child. And you know, I wonder if his family even noticed or picked up wind of the things that he's been doing, because it seems like he does this every other weekend. All around town, he had a reputation of having little man syndrome, but not truly dangerous. People there thought he was mentally disturbed, but only a few people actually liked him and considered him a friend. And I wonder how they felt after they found out all the things he's done. One of them was Doreen Dempsey. Dempsey, 23, an unwed mother of a 2-year-old girl and pregnant with a second child, decided to leave the area and accepted a ride to a bus station from her old friend Pee-wee. Instead, old Donald took her out to a secluded wooded area, raped and killed her, then raped and sodomized her baby. After killing the child, he buried the two together. I mean, there's just no comments on this one. This guy's straight out of hell, so that's just like a baby. Man. In 1975, Pee-wee, now 42 and a grandfather, had been steadily killing for 6 years. He got away with it mainly because he never involved others in his highway murders, but even doing this alone, I still don't understand the type of luck this guy had to have on his side to not get caught. And I bet most of the people that he's killed got filed as missing persons reports. But this changed in 1975. You see, after Pee-wee murdered 3 people whose van had broken down on the highway, which I don't understand how he managed to do that all by himself, Pee-wee needed help to get rid of the bodies and enlisted the aid of an ex-con, Walter Neely. Gaskins offered to let Neely have the van to help him. Neely drove the van to Pee-wee's garage so Pee-wee could repaint it and sell it. This is where Pee-wee got too greedy in his bloodlust. That same year, Pee-wee was paid $1,500 to kill Silas Yates, a wealthy farmer from Florence County. So now he's an assassin. Susan Kipper, an angry ex-girlfriend, hired Pee-wee for the job. John Powell and John Owens handled all the correspondence between Kipper and Pee-wee arranging the murder. Diana Neely, Walter's wife, claimed to have car problems to lure Yates from his home on February 12th. It was then when Pee-wee kidnapped and murdered Yates, as Powell and Owens watched. Then the three buried his body. Soon after, Neely and her boyfriend, ex-con Avery Howard, attempted to blackmail Pee-wee for $5,000 in hush money, which is idiotic to blackmail a murderer, so what did Pee-wee do? He disposed of them when they met for the payoff. So I guess this gets kind of confusing. So Walter Neely is married to Diana Neely, and she and her boyfriend, I guess she has a boyfriend, so she's cheating on her husband with ex-con Avery Howard. So Neely and her boyfriend attempted to blackmail Pee-wee for the job and $5,000 of hush money. After that, Pee-wee went back to business as usual, killing and torturing people he knew. including a 13-year-old Kim Ginkins, who sexually rejected him. And this guy is 42 years old, and he's going after a 13-year-old and gets mad that she sexually rejects him. I mean, this guy's fucking insane. As you can see, there's a pattern going on here, as he kills those who undermine and underestimate him. Like in this next murder spree he commits. Not knowing the wrath of Pee-wee, two locals, Johnny Knight and Dennis Bellingham, robbed Pee-wee's repair shop and were eventually murdered and buried with other locals in his private cemetery. Again, he called on Walter Neely. He called on Walter for help burying them. Pee-wee thought Walter was a trusted friend after helping him for a second time, pointing out the graves of other locals that he had murdered and buried. Meanwhile, an investigation into Kim Ginkins' disappearance was turning up leads that all pointed to Donald Gaskins. Armed with a search warrant, the authorities went through Donald's apartment and uncovered clothing worn by Ginkins. He was indicted for contributing to the delinquency of a minor and stayed in jail awaiting his trial. Gaskins tucked away in jail and unable to influence Walter, the police increased the pressure on Walter and it worked. During an interrogation, Walter broke down to save his own skin and led police to the private cemetery on the land that Donald owned in Prospect. He even pointed out where some of the bodies were buried. Police uncovered the bodies of 8 of his victims, including Howard, Knight, Bellingham, Dempsey, and her child. On April 27, 1976, Gaskins and Walter were charged with 8 counts of murder. Gaskins' attempt to appear as an innocent victim failed. On May 24th, a jury found him guilty of murdering Bellamy, and he was given the death sentence, later confessed to 7 additional murders. Now here comes the part we've all been waiting for. In November 1976, his sentence was commuted to 7 consecutive life terms after the US Supreme Court ruled South Carolina's death penalty unconstitutionally, sadly for him. Over the next few years, Gaskins enjoyed grandiose treatment from the other inmates because of his reputation as a ruthless killer. But karma found a way. The death penalty was reinstated in South Carolina in 1978. This meant little to Gaskins until he was found guilty of murdering Rudolph Tyner, a fellow prisoner on death row for murdering an elderly couple, Bill and Myrtle Moon. Myrtle Moon's son hired Pee-wee to murder Rudolph, and after several failed attempts, Pee-wee successfully killed him by blowing him up with a radio that he rigged with explosives. Now dubbed the meanest man in America, Gaskins once again received the death penalty. In an attempt to stay out of the electric chair, Gaskins confessed to more murders. Had his claims been true, it would have made him the worst serial killer in the history of South Carolina. He admitted to murdering Peggy Catino, 13, the daughter of a prominent South Carolina family. William Pierce had already been convicted for the crime and sentenced to life in prison. Authorities were unable to correlate the details of Gaskins' confession and rejected it, claiming that he did it to attract media attention. During the last months of his life, Gaskins worked with an author, Wilton Earle, on his book, quote, The Final Truth, dictating his memoirs into a tape recorder. In the book, which was published in 1993, Gaskins talks all about the murders. As his execution date grew closer, he became more philosophical about his life, why he had murdered, and his date with death. And it's kind of ironic for someone who disregards the lives of others to fight so hard to avoid the electric chair. On the day he was scheduled to die, he slashed his wrists in an effort to postpone the execution. However, unlike his escape from death in 1976, when his sentence was commuted to life in prison, Gaskins was stitched up and placed on the electric chair as scheduled. With the power of 2,000 volts running through his body, he was pronounced dead by electrocution at 1:05 a.m. on September 6, 1991. And I don't even think the electric chair was a harsh enough punishment for this guy. I think he deserved an eye for an eye type of deal. Because he did some pretty messed up things. But it will probably never be known whether Gaskins' memories and the final truth were actually truthful or just fabrications based on his desire to be known as one of the most prolific serial killers in the US. Not just a small man. He claimed to have killed over 100 people, although he never offered proof or provided information on where the bodies were. And that is the story of Donald Gaskins, aka Pee-wee. Alright, well, that's it for today's episode. Join us next week for some more true crime stories. Until then, be safe.